Turmoil on financial markets, mortgage-heavy banks, a sluggish economy, and a housing market in crisis. The U.S. government is pledging to inject billions of dollars to shore up its wobbly financial system that brought down at least two major international investment firms in the last couple of weeks. Television viewers around the world were shocked to see images of Wall Street brokers and white-collar professionals packing up their offices and hitting the streets looking for new jobs. The crippling economic crisis is one of the top issues on the minds of U.S. voters, who will be turning out in November to elect a new president. Policy advisor for urban economic issues for U.S. bishops, Tom Schellenberger, says the bishops' conference is urging Catholic voters to focus not on political questions such as, are you better off than you were 2 or 4 years ago? Rather, each of us, he says, should enter the voting booth focusing on the ethical and moral dimensions of public policies that affect the whole community. Schellenberger analyzes the moral debate with Emer McCarthy.
In August, we lost another 84,000 jobs. We have growing unemployment. In the first half of 2008, we've lost over 600,000 jobs. So we have a huge number of folks looking for work in the American economy. This is the largest continued loss of jobs, 8 months in a row, continuing declining in workforce in 60 years. So we've put ourselves in a very difficult position of really stagnant growth in the economy.
Indeed, Tom, the economy has been the focus of so many people's attention throughout 2008. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, they write, the economy must serve people, not the other way around. Do you feel, as an American citizen, first of all, and obviously also as an expert in your field, that the U.S. economy is serving the people of America?
Well, the economy is an interesting dynamic of how people engage with one another to be able to advance the social concerns of that community. Right now, the American economy is staggering and stuttering. It's basically a consumer growth economy. And the loss of income, it's been a continued loss of income since coming out of the last recession in 2000. So American families primarily are trying to figure out how they're going to make it with less money and greater demand for consumer goods. So the family, which is the foundation of society, is being shaped by these social and trying workplace times. We have little in Americans' recent past to be able to deal with this. The American economy needs to be able to figure out how we're going to shift from this post-service economy. We're no longer manufacturing like we've lost hundreds of thousands of manufacturing jobs. So we need to be able to figure out how we're going to redirect through education and employment the growth of American society. And that's what everybody's talking about, because we know that we can't continue the way we are and be able to be the dynamic force we need to be.
Now, of course, globally, the United States of America is looked at as being the inventor and indeed the epitome of the capitalist society. But from the picture that you're painting, Tom, what we're looking at right now is we're looking at many, many families across the United States of America with no income and yet a mortgage to pay, children to feed and clothe, and increasing demands on their already fragile financial position. And if we're also looking at many, many families where perhaps the parents are still working, but they are being increasingly demanded from their employers to work longer hours, therefore putting more pressures on the family. Tom, for people who aren't in the United States, can you tell us, is there any help for families in the United States? Is there any form of social benefits for lower income or unemployed families where there's no income? Or is there any kind of state intervention to help mothers and fathers who have to work to pay the mortgage to take care of their children? Is there any kind of social assistance at all there? And if so, what kind is there?
Well, the social assistance varies from place to place. Let's take a look, for example, on what's called unemployment insurance. The Congress just extended what the traditional 26 weeks of benefits that are available to folks who lose a job. They've extended an extra 13 weeks, and there's talk of extending it again another 13 weeks. But unfortunately, it's a state-federal combination employment uninsurance program that only covers about 40% of the American workforce. So a large number of folks that end up losing their job have no recourse other than finding other work because the state, there is no state support for them. If you are a working family, you do get credit for children. There's a child tax credit that's available. There's also an earned income tax credit for low-income workers that increases their its wage support, basically. So we have some wage support. We have some allowances for raising children. But even with that, there's a difficulty for families in terms of mortgage or rents. For example, if you make the minimum wage here in the United States, which is $6.55, the federal minimum wage, which is about $13,600 a year, you can't rent a fair market value apartment any place in the country for that at that level. If you that for a family of two, the poverty line is $13,000, so you're just above a poverty line if you're a mom of one kid making minimum wage. For a parent with two kids, the poverty wage is $16,000. The poverty line is $16,000. So you're just below the poverty line if you're a minimum wage worker. Apartment, a studio apartment, that is an apartment with no bedroom, would run about $19,000 a year. So you obviously, if you're making 13, you can't pay 19. So there is no place in the United States that you can rent a reasonable, modest apartment on minimum wage. So we need to be able to figure out ways to help folks do that. We do have housing choice vouchers. The federal government assists low-income people with their rent, but it's not a guaranteed right. It's only available to about 3 million people, and there are about 9 million people that need them. So we're about 6 million units short of being able to help everyone. So we need to be able to figure out better ways of making work pay, better ways of making the market responsive to the human needs of families, and we need to be able to figure out ways to support those folks that find themselves squeezed by these conditions.
The first moral dilemma that you bring up, you write that today, without a job that pays a family wage, marriage and starting a family seem impossible. Are you seeing an increment in the amount of people who are choosing not to get married and not to have a family because of their economic conditions?
We find that among low-income Americans, the choice of marriage is really out of the question. And so you find people where the social situation just doesn't allow them to form that marital bond, which has an impact upon children and the way children are raised. And basically, it can actually become generational as poverty can become generational. So we really it is really a very trying time for families as they face these broad social forces that they feel they have no power over and no ability to change. And it's undermining the very crux of society as more and more people choose that they can't afford to marry.
And then, of course, we have the other side of the divide created by the current economic policies. We have the disappearance of the middle classes and the widening gap between the very, very rich and the very, very poor. What's happening here?
Beginning in the 1970s, family income started, while growing, it began favoring those at the very top of the wage scale. But this really exploded in the 1990s. And by the beginning of the 21st century, workers at the very top of the earning scale started consuming all of our economic growth, all of our economic growth. And for the first time since the Great Depression, since the 1920s, the wage disparity is so large that the middle folks are falling further and further behind. And so there's a great deal of pressure being put on folks in the middle, because more and more husbands and wives are working to make up what one income used to where one income used to suffice. So those pressures place greater needs on the busyness of family life. I mean, raising children when both parents are working. Those pressing problems that confront family life are due in a large part to the economic stress that's brought about by today's growing disparity between rich and poor.
Another issue that we need to look at currently, of course, we're in the climate of the final weeks ahead of the U.S. presidential vote. What difference is there, if any, between the economic policies of the two main parties, the Democrats and the Republicans? Does anything differentiate between the two?
Yes, there is. The Republican Party approaches it from a very individual point of view. They believe that government needs to be present to protect the American individuals from fraud and abuse, but for the most part that businesses need to be freed of regulation and their innovation and creativity supported so that they can create jobs and move the American economy forward. The Democrats, on the other hand, believe that while it's important that businesses not be restricted in terms of direction and growth, but that they seek to build through R&D, through research and development, and to help direct the economy in ways that maintain jobs and approaches within the American economy. So there's a much more structured approach to economics in an economic response among the Democrats, which the Republicans would say restricts and drives business away from the American economy. So they're just two different approaches, all within the American free enterprise system. One looks at the need for more regulation, the Democrats, to be able to direct the economy in certain ways, and the Republicans look to free the economy to be able to make it grow. So there are two distinct approaches to the way the two parties look at economic growth.
What is the Catholic Church in the United States urging voters to look for in so far as what really needs to be done by the next government, the next president, to try and help the economic situation and, above all, the weakest section of society or so badly hurt by the current economic standing?
The bishops are urging Catholic voters to test the policies of governments and candidates' positions against Catholic principles and Catholic teaching. They urge the voters not to focus on political questions of whether they themselves, individually, are you better off than you were 2 or 4 years ago. But we should enter that voting booth focusing on the whole ethical and moral dimensions of public policies that infect the entire community. Are we better off as a community because of the policies and directions that the individual party and candidates will take us?
Tom Schellebarger is the policy advisor for urban economic issues for the U.S. Catholic bishops.